There's one. Set for stun.
Hi, I'm Jay. This is my hetero life mate, Solid Bob.
Inconceivable!
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And welcome to a very special episode of The Unique Geek. Our second annual Halloween special thingy where we talk things Halloween-y and horror-y? Not horror-y, but horror-y. Joining us tonight will be Ed, Ron, Lee.
Hello.
This, of course, just chimes in right there. Carrie, and of course, Rox, who is, you know, nothing but horror. Listen in and enjoy.
Yeah.
That's my creepy laugh.
There's Ed's creepy laugh.
Welcome.
I thought it would just be hey girls.
God.
That's a different creepy laugh.
That's for the desperate podcast.
So go around the horn real quick once again. So joining us tonight, of course, is Lee. How you doing, Lee?
I'm good.
Already said
you?
Hi. You don't get to say hi again.
I just did.
Rox, how you doing?
Good day. I'm fine.
Let's see. We got Carrie, the most dangerous man in podcasting.
I will relinquish my hi to Lee if she wants to say hi again.
Lee, do you wish to take his
hi? Hi.
Okay. And Ron joining us on two different lines. How you doing, Ron?
How audio thingy works.
Okay. And calling us all together yet again, forcing everyone to show up against everyone's will, is Ed. Ed, how you doing? The original Unique Geek.
Hi-o, everybody.
Hi.
So, Ed, what did you call it?
Said this is the second annual, but unfortunately this isn't the second annual because we missed last year.
I realized.
Did we miss last year? Yeah. I don't know why we didn't get together last year. I completely forgot about it.
Biannual.
I like that. Biannual.
This podcast cannot get married in only but a few states. Was it different biannual? Never mind. So, Ed, yes, you dragged us all out here like dead bodies for the casting call at Walking Dead. That's what I was trying to get out. That was the joke I was trying to make. What do you got for us?
Well, actually, that's a good segue because that's the very first thing I wanted to talk about was the new episode that just aired a couple of days ago, the new season, third season of The Walking Dead. I'm hoping everyone on this panel got a chance to see it.
What's The Walking Dead?
We're a panel?
Sure, we're a panel.
I know Lee didn't see it. Ron, did you see it?
No.
Yeah.
Are we going to be giving...
But it's okay. You're not spoiling it for me.
It'll take her a while to watch it, so you're good.
Well, I mean, I actually went back and listened to our last Halloween episode, and the last time we had talked about The Walking Dead, it was actually hadn't even aired yet, the first season. And now we're on the third season, and, you know, the first season we had Frank Darabont, the genius that is Frank Darabont, directing the first season, and then unfortunately, we didn't have him for the second season, and now we're getting into the third season without him again, of course.
But I think we're getting more Kirkman involvement this season.
It seems to be. We opened up the season opener with that was basically a scene from the comic book for them entering the prison.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, well.
Too late now.
You said, unfortunately, he was not with the second season, which I was not that optimistic when they announced that he would not be a part of the second season. But with a couple big caveats, I enjoyed it.
I thought the second season?
I did enjoy the second season. There were a couple things that I didn't. The pacing was not good. they stayed on that damn farm way too long. It drug along. But overall, I still enjoyed it. They made up for it with the last episode in particular.
I think that's in my opinion, that was the shining light of the entire season, was that final episode. Because personally, I thought the second season was pretty much just dreary crap. I mean, not really crap. That's a strong word, yes. But I did not enjoy the second season whatsoever.
I think the general consensus was, please get off the farm.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, stop searching for a kid we already know.
You know, and the only difference from on the farm, the change of venue was when Lori decides to don a jacket at night. It's like, it's the South. Why is she putting a jacket on to drive? And that was towards the end, you know, when she flips the car.
Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, Lori puts on a jacket. You know, that's why, it was like the only thing that sort of indicated, oh, it's going to get towards fall now. You know, it was good. The pacing was, you know, they finally had to hash out, you know, if anything, it was more character driven, you know, of setting up the triangle between Rick, Lori, and Shane, and resolving the whole Shane issue. And now I have this horrible feeling that this season will be, let's punish Lori any chance I can get. You know,
yay.
That may go over with the viewers as a whole, because she is by far the least character.
She is. She's such a bitch. She is like a, you know, Lady Macbeth type character that just should go.
Character driven problems. That was one of the two big ones. Everyone hates Lori. And everyone hates the fact that Carl can't stay where he's supposed to be.
I hate Carl. Well, no, hate Carl. I'm sorry.
But as we learned in the first episode.
But that's a kid, though. A kid.
So? I don't care.
I'm just saying this is what kids do, though. They don't listen
to
what
not, I know, but did you not? See, this is where that whole, and we can break into this on the whole horror thing. It's like Carl will be the bad seed from the 1950s, you know, the horrible kid.
Well,
I mean, I have read the comic, so I understand Carl is sort of the compass of how, you know, society deteriorates pretty quickly, you know, especially in the spoiler on the comic, there's a scene where Carl starts calculating who is a hindrance to their group that they can just dump to the waste, the side of the road. And Rick is like appalled. So anyway, but I don't like Carl.
Well, I was going to say that, as we saw in the beginning of season three, Carl can now go anywhere he wants because he pretty much looks like they're letting him defend himself.
And he can wield the Punisher too. He was making headshots like every shot. And I was like, what the heck?
Well, when you consider Rick almost has to let him do that due to the fact that in the comic it was Carl that shot Shane.
In the comic,
yeah. So in this one, what was it? Last season, you know, what is it? Carl saw Rick kill Shane, right? I forgot that last episode. Yeah, so...
And then he killed the Shane zombie.
Right, yes. So I think there was sort of some weird bonding thing going on in a post-apocalyptic world. That, okay, yeah, you just shot this guy. He was my best friend. And you shot I shot the real one, but you shot the zombie one, so...
That a boy. Know.
Well, the thing is, too, don't forget there was that scene, that split-second scene where Carl has the gun and Rick doesn't know that Carl might shoot him. You know, so there is that. So it's like, oh, let's make a silencer for this kid for this next season.
And my understanding is silencers don't work that well.
Especially
homemade
not
ones.
The one it looked like he had. It looked like he was using the old soda bottle silencer, which works once.
Yeah.
What kind is it?
It looks like a soda bottle silencer. In essence, you take an empty drink container,
right,
put it over the muzzle of the gun, and yeah, use duct tape or something to affix it so that it allows the gas that the shell creates to expand in a more contained manner so it doesn't suddenly explode and make a huge racket. It doesn't work that well, it's only going to work once.
I heard you can use like a condom too. Does that work?
Yeah, that's the same basic idea. It allows the gas to collect and expand more uniform way than just firing it and it goes everywhere.
So you are asking, Rox,
if you don't want the person you're shooting to get pregnant.
That's right.
Rox is asking,
if you put it over a gun, the bullet goes through and they always get pregnant.
What were you going
to
say, John?
Well, I was just going to point out that you're asking someone to put the condom on their gun. Is that some sort of euphemism as well?
Could be.
Can you put this over your barrel?
Could be. You know, it's a post-apocalyptic world. Do you think Rick or Lori are going to explain the facts of life to Carl? No. They just give him subtle hints like, here's how you put on a condom on your gun.
Actually, why would you even teach anyone to use a condom at all in a post-apocalyptic world?
See, when one zombie eats another zombie.
You're one of the people who wants to repopulate the world?
Well, that
would you do that?
Well,
not with those people. I'm sorry. Not with that group. I would go off and find my own group.
I don't know
They did hint that, you know, Carl was like, you know, kind of interested in the farmer's daughter.
Yeah.
We all are. And I don't know if it's possible for you to get more wind going through your phone, but I'm sure you're going to try.
I'm outside in the hurricane.
Sorry. Okay, so Walking Dead Season 3 seems to be off to a bang-bang start.
It is a bang start.
Well, you know, and I was actually kind of hoping that they would show more of Michonne, and they really didn't show a whole lot of her in the first episode.
My understanding is that we'll see plenty of her, correct?
Yeah, you will.
Yes, you will.
I never read the comics, so I don't know.
My only thing about the way they're doing it, it's like, for those of us that have read the comic, it's like, okay, hurry up, join her, you know, have her join with the other group, please, please. You know, she was there when they got the prison. So, you know, this two dual story arc thing is going to be, I think, a slight annoyance to us that have read the comic.
Well, I've stopped comparing it to the comic long time ago. So, I mean, I
know, but you're good. I'm sorry. You will be going, oh, when will she be with the other group?
Yeah.
You will. Mark my words.
Now, I forget who mentioned it, but to somebody's point, Kirkman does seem a lot more involved. A.
He is.
B. He's also doing a lot more press, too, for it. I mean, I've seen him a lot more on television than in the past.
And on YouTube. He's got interviews left and right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because this morning I just saw him like on, maybe he was on, was he on 30
and
Rock? Might have been on 30 Rock.
I don't know, but he always makes a point of, you know, the last couple of years he's been doing Comic-Con up in New York, which
in
is like
San Diego.
Still, I know, but as far as comics and stuff, Comic-Con New York is still trying to keep that grip on, we're a comic show, or,
right,
you know, a comic book convention. So he always draws a big crowd to talk about the comic, you know, especially with, what is it? It's the third compendium is out. So you can buy the Walking Dead comic in, like, I don't know, like 100 issues or something. It's some crazy amount. It's like 3 trades or something.
Well, I know the most recent trade I just bought not too long ago is up to issue, I think, 97, I think it is. So if they have the, compendium, it would probably go up to that issue, probably.
Right. So.
And that's how I've been reading them, is by the trades. I haven't been buying them issue by issue. I've been buying them by the trade.
Yeah.
I've been following them by the trades, too. And I have to admit that even in the trades, there are times when that series really bogs down. So
Yes.
I guess I tolerated it more last season than I would have if it had been another story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that, you know, and I mean, and the first episode of this season has high hopes that...
Yep, good pacing. It looks like they're not skimping on the special effects budget.
Hopefully it'll be better this season than last season.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, too, when you consider... And we can diverge a little bit. It was sort of funny. Today on NPR, they were talking about Jessica Lange slumming on TV. It's like, no, TV, and I wish people would stop comparing TV and movies, because the writing on TV is just as good, if not better, than most films coming out in the theaters. So, American Horror starts tonight. Today's Wednesday, and she got an Emmy for her portrayal in the first series, American Horror.
So right. you tell me this, Rox. Okay, so mm-hmm. I saw the first season, which is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me what's going on. I mean, I kind of read some of the stuff. I guess this is a completely different timeline?
It's a different timeline.
World. I mean, what the heck?
It's a different timeline, different people. Basically, you know what? It's a good comparison to call it sort of like an EC comic for adults for a season. Okay, so you have the general, this is our comic title, American Horror. Okay. And then each year or each, you know, season, we'll do another storyline, which is fine, because what they're doing is a lot of the actors, they don't necessarily have to be in every single series. They can bow out. However, a lot of people like the idea. It's like, oh, I can play a different character. I'm on the same show, but they wrote, I think she's playing, I don't know if she's like a Nurse Ratched type character for this insane asylum. So this takes place in 1962, and it's in an insane asylum.
That's some of the confusion by me, is that you've got some of the same actors as the first season, but I guess they're mm-hmm. playing completely different characters?
Completely different characters, yes. And they did say that last year, when they came out with the premise of the show.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Oh, yeah. Because I was reading some news blips about it just to read up on, you know, because I think I knew about it, and then I'm like, oh, I need to jump in on this. This will be fun. And then I read some bits, and they're like, yeah, for the next series, it'll be a totally different one. Different, you know, same people, but they'll be playing something different.
So
and I
I'm
like
one-
that.
Well, see, I'm wondering, is it even worth watching? That's one thing I was wondering, if it's even worth watching this new season.
I haven't seen it yet, but having the same actors play different roles would be kind of like coming into your home and having someone sneak in and rearrange the furniture while you weren't aware. I don't
know. And that's the horror of it, though.
That'd take a lot of getting used to.
Not really.
Are you still confused that Gandalf is also Magneto? Does that confuse you too?
Strangely, though, I'm okay with that, because they're both basically wizards.
But the thing is honestly, it's a different story. Now, if you look at an EC comic, okay, EC horror, Tales of the Crypt, whatever, you know, weird tales. It's kind of funny when you see some of the artwork that were you know, like Wally Wood and stuff, he drew kind of the same kind of characters. So that's the way I see it. You know, it's like, oh, it's the same actress. So I've you know, seen enough theater and stuff that I've been to stuff where I saw Macbeth where they had only like so many players, and everybody would, you know, it's like Macbeth would be played by three different actors in one night or something like that. So it's acting chops and stuff of how well a writer can, you know, come up with a new story and stuff. You know, I'll give it a chance because I like the story arc. It kind of fell apart a little bit with the daughter.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as atmosphere, creepiness, you know, I would give it like a good solid, you know, B.
So that's so you for someone like me who did watch the first season, do you think it's worth and who's actually considering not to watch the second season, do you think I should at least give it a try?
Yeah. Okay. I think so.
I'll put it on my recorder.
If anything, all right. If you find the whole thing about, you know, a new actor or the same actor playing somebody different, just see it as like a long mini series and and wait for it to come on. I don't think it's on Netflix or anything, but Hulu will stream the first 5 episodes, and then you know it's a mini series.
Yeah,
that's all. It's you know
one of the things that did kind of get me about the first season is that it's called American Horror Story, right?
Yeah.
There didn't seem to me as a whole lot of horror going on in that. I mean, yeah, there was a few creepy moments, especially when it went to the basement and stuff like that with the whatever creepy creature kid there. But other than that, I didn't really find it so much as an actual horror story.
Well,
I'm wondering if it's going to change that in this next season.
Maybe, but I guess everybody's perception of what is horrific to them is different. Lee, and if you want to jump in on this one, I mean, it's like, you know, somebody finding out that they have some sort of demon child in them, that, you know, especially for a pregnant woman, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, that this child was born of a rape and stuff. Yeah, that could be horrific.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
You know,
by a ghost in a gimp costume.
In a gimp costume,
for you.
Yeah.
I think at the level here, I'm getting concerned now as to what is horror.
But I mean, everybody.
That's just a regular Tuesday night.
But I think everybody handles horror and what they think is a horrific situation differently. I mean, that's where you have people like, all right, that's where you get like black comedies from. It's a horrific situation. But you find humor in it because you've been around it for so long. You can actually find something to laugh about. I get, you know.
So can we make a Tyler Perry joke now?
Right, if you like. Even though some people think Tyler Perry's horrific, but you know.
I mean, I guess the setting as far as being an asylum could be horrific enough because I know that some of those horror movies that take place in asylums pretty much creep me out. So.
Well, just think the number one fear, I think, for and especially 1962. Think of it this way, and I'm going on the premise I haven't seen this is during that time anybody could really any of your family members could pretty much Baker Act you. It didn't call it Baker Act, but they could
admit you.
Admit you into an insane asylum. And the thing is during that time period, conditions were horrible. Yeah. I mean, just simply deplorable. And it was – there's a documentary about Staten Island and about this institute. And it was actually for the mentally handicapped. And the conditions, and it was one of those, I don't know, it wasn't John Stossel, it was Geraldo in his early career actually made an expose on this island, you know, Staten Island's, you know, institute. And it was, oh my God, it was horrible. There were like no lights on. It's like, oh, why do they need lights? Why do these handicapped kids in their own filth sitting on the floor, why do they need lights? I mean, it was just incredible. So, and you know, if you're a sane person and you're, you know, admitted into and committed into an insane asylum and you're trying to convince people that you're sane, that would be, you know, horrific in itself. You know, no, I'm sane. No, you're not, because you're saying you're sane. We know you're not. You're delusional. It's, you know, because you know, those, I mean, just look at One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, you know, and then all you have is that creepy Nurse Ratched type person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I would give it a chance. You know, I mean, if it got Emmy nods, then, you know, the people at the Emmys are looking at something. So,
Yeah, I know some of those, at least around Halloween time, there was a couple of episodes that were actually pretty decent. I guess their Halloween episode was actually pretty decent.
Oh, with the gay guys? That was funny. Yes.
That was pretty good.
I mean, just think. Can you imagine being I mean, actually, the ending, in a way, you're in hell, that you're a ghost, and you're stuck with other ghosts you do not want to be around.
Right. Yeah, that's hell.
That is hell.
That is horrific. Yeah, and that's something else I wanted to talk about too. You had mentioned about EC Comics, and I actually have been recently myself really intrigued by some of these classic horror comics, and even some of the classic, you know, the Pulp Fiction stuff, from the like the 30s and 40s, and have actually been recently picking up some of the some Ghost Manor issues from Charlton Comics from like the 70s and those, and those have been really good. Do you have any background on some of this, the Pulp Fiction stuff as far as the horror? Because I haven't read anything yet, and I'm really, really intrigued as far as where to start, what's good, some good stuff to read as far as the, you know, a lot of the Pulp Fiction, even the Pulp Fiction comics on the horror side.
Let's see. If you're starting out wanting to know, the interesting thing about writers in general, when you consider even as far as back as like Dickens, a lot of authors were not really pigeonholed like in the 1800s. So Poe was also a mystery writer and he wrote horror. So he was never really pigeonholed. You know, he can actually combine the two. Dickens wrote The Signal Man, and that was sort of his ghost story. You know, and then of course he wrote, you know, other kind of, you know, Christmas Carol and stuff. So a lot of authors, Edith Wharton, she's American. She wrote House of Mirth, but she also had some ghost stories. If you really want to know sort of a starting point, Weird Tales is good.
I was going to ask about that because that's one thing that keeps popping up. Every time I look up pulp, you know, do a Google search on pulp horror, Weird Tales seems to be one that pops up quite frequently. And they've got some really cool covers. A lot of their magazine covers are some really cool art on those.
Those covers are really cool. Every once in a while, you'll find a strange one in Argosy. And I know Argosy was sort of an adventure-type magazine. I mean, when you consider people read a lot, because there wasn't really, you know, you had radio and stuff, but there really wasn't a lot. So authors can actually make a lot of money just selling their stories to, you know, pulp magazines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Saturday Evening Post actually would have like Halloween episodes and stories in that. Some of the other stuff, The New Yorker would have stories. Weird Tales, they always had, it was sort of funny for those of you guys that know, you know, DC Comics, Julie Schwartz was an agent, and he actually worked for, I think he worked for Weird Tales later, but he was an agent for H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, wow.
In his, early years for Julie, later years for H.P. Lovecraft. I think it was towards the end of his life.
Now, H.P. Lovecraft, that's a guy that really liked Harry Potter?
No.
Is that who it was? No.
Let's see. Robert E. Howard is really good.
Oh yeah.
He does a great crossover with all the Conan stuff.
Well, he does. I mean, he did a lot of the writing in those Weird Tales magazines, right?
He did. Here's the cool thing. If you want to look at it this way, if you take with a pen, you put H.P. Lovecraft in the middle, okay? Then from there, the interesting thing is even though H.P. Lovecraft only had like so many stories out, he wasn't really prolific. However, he was very prolific in letter writing. So he created circle upon circle of friends like Clark Ashton Smith, I think Ramsey Campbell actually wrote to him. He's a Brit writer. He still writes horror. He still keeps going back to H.P. Lovecraft. So if you type in H.P. Lovecraft, and he actually had his own little society of, you know, people that he would write to constantly. He visited Robert E. Howard, and they corresponded a lot, you know, and Robert E. Howard actually wrote a couple mythos stories. So that's where you came up with the whole Cthulhu mythos. I mean, H.P. Lovecraft didn't even ask anyone to do this. You know, everyone just liked the story so much. It's like, oh, all of a sudden, it's like way back in the 20s, Creative Commons was sort of created. You know, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to do a story based on what you've done. And it just proliferated from there. And
basically fanfic before fanfic.
Fanfic before fanfic. And it's sort of funny that you get some people saying, yes, they do pay homage to H.P. Lovecraft. And some say no. You know, I know Clive Barker bitches about H.P. Lovecraft, whereas, you know, Stephen King is actually, you know, his work has, you know, had an effect on me. Even certain modern writers, like, of all people, Joyce Carol Oates, who actually can cross the border. She's one of those authors that is known as regular fiction because she wins Pulitzers and stuff. But she is in, there is an anthology book, Lovecraft Unbound. And she actually wrote a really cool, it was called Commencement. And it was a Cthulhu type story, and it was really, really good. So she really knows how, and she's, you know, alive and well, and she can really expound on that. But pick up, you can always pick up, Barnes & Noble always has sort of some compilation of weird tales that they can cobble, because a lot of those stories are public domain now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find a couple of covers, you know, you can type in the author's name and then find, you know, some of their free work, especially on manybooks.net or the Gutenberg Project.
Mm-hmm.
Those are great places to find pulp. And I think with manybooks.net, they actually have a segment for pulp and a decent section for horror.
I've lurked some of the Kindle store free listings, too, and I've picked up one or two Lovecraft related books myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another
and
one, if you don't mind spending time doing it.
Oh yeah. And the cool thing about pulp is the storylines, they're not too long because, you know, there was a limited amount of space per monthly issue. So the cool, and I've read my fair share. I love the short story just because, you know, you don't have to spend too much brain cells on trying to retain characters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good because some short stories can be very profound and they stick with you, opposed to a longer book.
I'll agree with that.
Well, yeah, there's one other source I actually had found recently called radioarchives.com. I first got really interested in pulp science fiction, you know, mainly because of the Big Bang Theory has the Captain Future poster on the wall. Well, they actually have ebooks of those old pulp science fiction and a few of the horror. Matter of fact, I just went there just now and they have Terror Tales, some of their horror pulp.
Oh, I know Terror Tales. Yeah.
So they have those that you can buy there in e-format also.
Can you get old Galaxies that way too? I have some. No.
I don't see that on this site. Looks like most of the stuff they have is pulp science fiction and some mystery, but not very much as far as horror. They have quite a bit of the spider, if you're familiar with the spider.
Yeah.
But that's a good source that I found that actually, you know, has some EPUBs, some ebooks there that you can download and buy and download, and they're pretty inexpensive. And they have the original cover and everything, which is pretty awesome.
That's cool. I you know what? It's interesting. When I saw your posting for the pulp thing, it got me onto thinking about authors that aren't known for writing horror, who wrote horror. It's like William Faulkner wrote horror.
No kidding.
He wrote a couple stories. D.H. Lawrence wrote this really great story, and there's a really cool movie called The Rocking Horse Winner. And it's about this kid that can go into a trance when he goes on this rocking horse, and he can come up with the winners for a horse race. Really great story. So that's D.H. Lawrence.
Wasn't that a movie? Wasn't that a movie with Gary Coleman?
You know, maybe.
I'll second the recommendation for that story. I read it ages and ages ago when I was in I think high school.
Mm-hmm,
and I still vividly remember it.
Yeah, that was like one of those, a teacher will latch on to that story, or, you know, so. One I like is Nikolai Gogol. He's Russian, and he lived around like he died around 1852 or so. But he did a lot of like Russian tales, which are, they do a lot. There's a lot of stories with the dead. If you want to, you know, see sort of where horror kind of gets its start, you know, look into some of the stuff turn of the century, you know, the 1800s and stuff. Arthur Machen, he is one that H.P. Lovecraft actually read a lot. And there's actually, and you can pick this up, H.P. Lovecraft wrote two treatises on, one is on suspense and one is on horror. And they're really good. They're very, you know, not educational, but they're very, you know, formal in the writing of, you know, what constitutes, you know, a story being horrific and stuff. So if you go to like Barnes and Noble, you can find that. I don't even have, I pulled out stuff and I just remembered that one, but they're really good, you know, write-ups that he wrote that in a fan fiction, and people actually noticed, you know, his way of writing. And he never went to college or anything. He was a dropout. He was kind of like a slacker writer in a way, because he would like sleep all day and then, you know, spend half the night walking the neighborhoods and stuff. And then eventually he'd get around to writing. So he was not as prolific as he could have been, I think. But Arthur Machen, he wrote a really cool story called, The God Pan. And it's like the early days of, like, here's a mad scientist, and he's trying to, you know, have his subjects see, you know, the unknown. And it drives people crazy. And that is where I think Lovecraft came up with the idea of cosmic horror. You know, that there are creatures and malevolent things too big for us to comprehend, that if we saw them, you would go insane because our brains can't handle that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Arthur Machen.
What, as far as comic books, you had mentioned EC Comics.
Oh, yeah.
What about Tales of Crypt? Have you read anything from Tales from the Crypt?
Oh, yeah. The thing about the EC Comics is they had Tales from the Crypt. You know, they had their own witch sort of host. And that's the cool thing about the horror comic, is they did it in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way. There's Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, Tales from the Crypt, Shock Suspense Stories. So those were their main ones, and they all have some sort of Tales of the Crypt, had the Crypt Keeper.
Well, that's what kind of like, I mean, that's why I said I bought some Ghost Manners recently, and and they have sort of like a crypt keeper type guy who narrates the stories also.
All of these do too. They're you know, EC Comics had, you know, plus they had Weird Science and Weird Fantasy. The Haunt of Fear has the old witch. That's their host. The Vault of Horror has the vault keeper, you know, and then there's the crypt keeper. The cool thing about the EC Comics stuff is years ago I picked up, and you can still get, they still produce these in trades. So you can actually get a full set from the EC Comics. The production is, you know, what you expect. You know, they just sort of scan the stuff. And it's not too bad. But the artwork is amazing in it. And I know that you can get, every once in a while they'll produce a really large scale one and just use the black and white art and not use the color, so you can actually see the pen work and stuff. Let's see. Wally Wood did some work. I think, like, Ray Bradbury has been featured in, I don't know, Tales from the Crypt. I think one of his stories. I think The Buried Woman is one. But these are, they're great. Like I said, it's always a tongue-in-cheek because they know that the guy that started EC Comics, William Gaines, knew that, oh, hey, we're hooking kids onto our comics because, you know, kids love horror. There's a certain age. I mean, Lee, are you there?
No, Lee left. Lee left a while ago. Yeah.
Did she really? Oh, okay. Didn't know. I was going to say her kid is now asking her if they can watch
Walking Dead.
So there is this time frame, and we all can think of the time when we started wanting to watch horror films.
Well, let's go around, because I actually had a question about that. Let's mm-hmm. go around. Ron, when did you first watch your first horror film? Do you remember? And what was it?
I think he's asleep. Gary?
No, I'm awake. No, the one that had the most impact was Creepshow. And as an 8-year-old, yeah, 8-year-old should not watch Creepshow.
The more you know.
The more you know.
What about you, Carrie? What was your first horror film experience?
I can't give an exact name. I grew up in the era where UHF TV was still a thing. I vividly remember on the weekends they had shows dedicated to airing horror movies. There was the mm-hmm. Creature Feature and
yeah,
several other, you know, at UHF Channel 30 here in Northeast Florida, and between that I think was my first real exposure to it. I honestly cannot think of the first real horror movie I saw in the theaters. It was always television that was my primary exposure.
Well, like Ron, do you have one that stuck with you that set the tone for your life or made you decide that, you know what, I'm never going to watch a horror film again? Did everyone just drop off or did it just carry
no,
off?
No, I think he's asleep again. He fell asleep.
Well, I was asking Carrie. I said, like Ron.
Yeah, you're asking Carrie, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were asking Ron.
He said Ron.
I did not get to see the movie. However, the TV promo for It's Alive, which in retrospect was a horribly cheesy, terrible movie. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody unless you want to watch it for a laugh. But as a very young me, seeing that television commercial for the movie just creeped me out. I think that's one of the first movies that I can really remember being creepy.
What about you, Ed?
Well, it was probably the early 80s when I was probably about 11 years old, was Phantasm, when I saw it on cable.
Oh, yeah.
That movie creeped me out, especially the little I don't know, those little people with the hoods.
I love that film.
Those things creeped me out. And I'm scared of little people to this day. I'm joking. That really, that movie probably set the bar for creepiness and really creeped me out. And it's just, that was a very creepy movie.
You know, I take back what I said earlier. I do remember the first horror movie that I saw in the theater that really made an impact on me, Poltergeist.
Oh.
I ran around talking about that movie nonstop for about a year.
Yeah, Poltergeist, I would have to agree with you, influenced my young childhood as well. What about you, Rox?
Oh, my God. I can't even. All right, here's the thing. It's I know a lot of people were, you know, sci-fi junkies. I was a horror junkie when I was a kid. And, all right, I grew up in upstate New York. So we had cable. So we had like 13 channels. And so we had WOR TV and we had WPIX and we had stuff coming from Elmira. Now, the cool thing about the Elmira channel, which would come in every once in a while, there was actually a show with a horror host. And they had this cool diorama. And there's an actually cool documentary recently about horror hosts. And they showed that one just like a fraction, and it was like this cool diorama of this house on a hill and little creatures going up to the hill, and it was this, you know, this Igor guy and this other guy, you know, who was the doctor, and they were introduced the shows, and that came on like a Saturday. Now, it's sort of funny, you know, just for those people listening, there was a time when movies were on all the time, and then all of a sudden, you know, these, you know, pay-per-view or paid advertisements just took over the airwaves, and we've been screwed ever since. But there was a time when there were movies on all the time, and, you know, because channels can buy them up cheap. So we would come home from school, and there might be a horror film, there might be an adventure film, whatever. But I think it was like White Zombie. And it was a 1932 Boris Bela Lugosi film. Uh-huh. And there's this ending where you see this, you know, and I don't remember fully of White Zombie, but at the end, there's this dead body swinging, and you see the shadow going back and forth. And I was hooked. I was so hooked. Because I'm like, oh my gosh, they're showing, like, death on TV. So we had Creature Feature, and we had Chiller, and it was like this little clay animation. It was this hand that came out of quicksand. It had six fingers, and it would go Chiller, and it would eat the letters and stuff, and they would have a film, and that was Saturday night. So we took over our family, which I had two older brothers, so we always watched like horror films. And during the late 70s, when a film went to, you know, the theater, sometimes in upstate New York, they came on TV pretty quick before the whole advent of HBO. Because we would watch, oh man, like, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. To this day, that's a film my sister would not watch unless all the lights were turned on. And it was like one of those really low budget ones where, you know, a bunch of kids go to this island and they try to summon, you know, the dead to rise. And inadvertently they do. It's funny as hell. So, I've been hooked. And man, when I was a kid, we had a bookshop that would sell magazines and comics without the covers. So it's really cheap to buy Famous Monsters of Filmland. So I had, oh my God, I had like a whole suitcase full of Famous Monsters of Filmland that my parents threw away.
Oh.
So, man, and I just would read about the films and stuff, and none of my friends really understood that. Except I had a teacher, Mr. Goodrich, who was kind of like, you know, kind of a closet horror fan too. He's like, oh, do you have a new magazine? I'm like, yeah, you know. So he would look at, you know, some of the magazines I brought in and stuff. Plus I collected horror comics back then. So I collected like Tales of the Unexpected, that started out in the 50s as a sci-fi comic book and then switched over. So I actually picked up like Grimm Comics, you know, the Gold Key stuff. They actually had their own sort of horror. There was a Boris Karloff. I would watch those shows, you know, Boris Karloff Presents. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've been watching some of the Alfred Hitchcock Presents stuff. That stuff's fun.
Oh, yeah. I remember those.
So it's...
Also, Twilight Zones, the Owls. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, One Step Beyond is another one.
One Step Beyond! Wait, no, that's different.
John, yes. You said you're not much of a horror film.
Oh, no, no, no.
But, I mean, did you not have at least one film long ago that maybe...
Poltergeist was a good one. But the one that sticks in my mind constantly is Faces of Death, which I know is technically not a horror film necessarily.
Which one did you watch? There was like 20 of them.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because it was something that's been in the back of my mind for a while now. That was another epiphany I had very young in my life, that there are two subgenres. There's the slasher or shock,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the creepy psychological thriller. And I always preferred the second one, whether it was Faces of Death, which was hugely popular because it was a spectacle, or all of the other slasher, teenager, summer camp, everybody gets killed kind of flicks.
See, I never could. I am not of the slasher. I rarely see the now what is called torture porn or slasher fic. I never cared for Halloween.
Oh.
I never cared for that film. I never cared
Halloween,
for Friday the 13th. Never cared. I never cared except for Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. That is my favorite.
Ugh. Ugh.
I love that film. I love that film.
I take that back. I actually rewatched that movie last year, and I actually have a new appreciation for it. I did watch it when I was really, really young, and it actually kind of freaked me out when the mask got all melty and the bugs and the snakes came out. That really freaked me out. But the overall, the movie was, I thought long ago, was pretty hokey. But last year, I watched it again, and yeah, I think I have a new appreciation for it. I mean, just the whole idea of the sorcery, you know, and it's a pretty decent film. I mean, even though it completely strays from the Halloween.
Which is, you know, I don't even know what the theory was of calling it Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. I don't know what.
Yeah, they could have just called it Season of the Witch and that would have been fine.
Right, yes. But the guy that played Connell O'Cochran, man, I love that. Brian O'Herlihy. He is a great actor. He played on a lot of stuff in the 50s. I saw that first run, and he's an awesome actor. Anyway.
Can you juxtapose those kind of movies with the ones that I remember really loving? The original black and white Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Those are the ones that I would just daydream about for days after I saw them. And
they still
stick with me.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, you just mentioned Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I have the Amazon Instant, and I just watched that again previously because the first time I watched it was probably like 25 years ago. And man, that movie still holds up really well to today. It is really good movie. I love that movie.
It's an awesome one. The thing about like the slasher fix is they don't really they it's almost like they're devoid of writing. You know, it's like, okay, here's what you were saying about American Horror. Oh, look, it's the same kind of bunch of people in the same situation with a different guy running after you.
That's one of the reasons why I appreciated the recent Cabin in the Woods so much, because it took every
Don't say too much.
It just plays on every existing stereotype out there for horror flicks, for the slash horror flicks. It is such a clever film, and you will love it.
Okay, well, I just got it in Netflix yesterday, and it's sitting right there, so I'm going to be watching that this weekend.
It is a brilliant, brilliant movie.
But if you want
a different take on slasher type horror, I would say, and it's always a stretch because the stuff you get imported is usually overdubbed and it's terrible. And I would say Dario Argento.
Oh,
he's
Suspiria.
Italian. Suspiria. Or opera. Opera is another one that is just like, holy crap.
For a slasher gore flick, nothing still sticks in my mind quite as much as Cannibal Holocaust.
Which one's that one?
I can't remember who did it. It was an Italian movie, and that was one in which it was banned in a lot of areas because it actually had a pig being killed and slaughtered.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is a legitimately gory, disgusting film, even by today's standards. And the thing's like 30 years old now. I think it was maybe even older than that. I think it might have been shot back in the 70s. I've got a browser window open. I'm going to look it up right now. But yeah, that one really stuck. It's a bad film. It's barely coherent.
Came out in 1980.
1980, okay. Close.
Wow.
But it still had images in it that will make you queasy now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But as far as just pure enjoyment, I still think it can't hold a candle to some of the psychological type thrillers. Even things, something like Psycho. Talk about a movie that aged well. That movie is still extremely watchable.
Oh, yes, it is. That one is, yes. Yeah, some of the old ones. Next week, TCM is going to have a double feature through Fathom. They're doing Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein.
Are
they going to show them in that order? Are they going to show Bride of Frankenstein?
No. They're going to do Frankenstein, then Bride of Frankenstein. But the cool thing is they got Boris Karloff's granddaughter and Bela Lugosi's son.
Yeah, I actually own those on DVD, so I always watch those around this time of year.
What holds up, too, really well is, I guess we've kind of moved to like the monster film, is...
The Wolfman. I love the Wolfman.
I only like the Wolfman because there's a gypsy in it.
Guillermo del Toro?
It's my weakest one is actually The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty
because
good.
It's really – it too is another James Whale film. So it has that kind of – James Whale did Frankenstein and he did Bride of Frankenstein. And he also did with Claude Rains – The Invisible Man, so he used the same kind of actors, again, American Horror, because Una O'Connor is a character actress from that time period, and she, once you know who she is, you will always remember her. She's got this, she always has this great scream. They always put her as a barmaid or, you know, innkeeper wife and stuff, and she is so great. And that really holds up really well. I saw that like 2 years ago on the screen again.
I'm going to advocate one even weaker than that. Let's hear a shout out for The Creature from the Black Lagoon, one of my favorite monster, but it was also shot very close to here.
Several places.
Wakulla Springs.
Apparently they also shot near the River City Brewing Company through that area. They filmed.
And to this day, I still have absolutely no idea why he would be chasing buxom blondes other than the fact he wanted to eat them.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on that, near that topic, let's start with Ron, I guess. Do you have any who just hung up?
Awesome.
Okay, well, start with Carrie then. Do you have any? do you have a favorite, like, say, 1980s horror film?
Oh, awesome,
Carrie. Just ignore Ron's cell phone.
I thought we were going to wait until you get.
Why you hang up on me?
I didn't hang up on you. I was asking you a question, and then you hung up. You got afraid. No. You were scared.
I can answer Carrie's question.
Oh,
it's answered in Cabin in the Woods. That's why.
Now, he said 80s. You missed that part.
Oh, no. He said why was it? Why
no,
he was
no,
chasing
that
cat,
was, that
bucks
was why
and blondes.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon was going after the blonde. that explains everything.
Yeah. Now, as far as
I will agree once he sees the movie.
70s, 80s.
What was the question? I was confused now. Was I being asked something?
You were being asked something, but we're going to ask Carrie first. Your favorite 70s, 80s era. We'll go see, you know, the 70s.
The color version of Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it's on my iPhone as we speak. I was watching part of it during my lunch break. I can never get tired of that.
Wow. How many times do you think you've watched it?
I probably well over 100. That matter. That was, I think, the second DVD I ever bought. The first was Bugs Life. The second was Night of the Living Dead.
The first was Bugs Life?
First DVD I ever bought was Bugs Life.
And then you immediately followed up with Night of the Living Dead. Were you overcompensating?
No, I like to expose the dichotomy of my persona. I'm an addict to zombies and Pixar.
Oh. What about you, Rox? 70s, 80s era.
You know, there are so many good ones. But anyway, the one I always watch, and I have a signed copy, is Phantasm. And then I'll go Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And maybe a third would be maybe The Fog, because they had a great ensemble in that one.
What about you, Ron?
I don't know.
All right, thank you, Ron.
Glad you called me back.
Thank you for participating.
I don't know. I don't watch a lot of horror. I can't think of these things off the top of my head.
Well, you already said Phantasm was a problem, wasn't it? Or was it? No, that wasn't you. That was, who was that? Who said?
What? Me. What movie? I said it was Phantasm.
Oh, it was
that
you.
Was my,
okay. Yeah. Well, what is your favorite 70s, 80s era?
Well, the one that actually really, really, really freaks me out is The Exorcist.
Oh, that's good. Mm. The Omen is good, too, of that time period.
I still haven't seen all The Exorcist, and I'm not sure I want to because little kids are creepy enough on their own. And getting possessed by the devil, you just don't mess with that.
Aren't, they normally are already possessed by the devil. If my
The Omen is really good.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Cool.
That was a young David Warner.
Cool. You also were talking the classic. Do you have a favorite classic? Actually, character, not necessarily the film. I know that you said that. Which one was yours that you were just talking about? The werewolf. Werewolf. No. I was going back to the old black and white. Do you have any of the classic Universal monsters that is your favorite?
I do love watching the Wolfman, and it's hard to even deviate even from Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. I love those too. So those are the three that I actually watch most frequently around this time of the year of the Universal horror.
What about you, Carrie?
Character
wise from the Universal.
Oh, geez. You know, that's like trying to pick your favorite child. You embrace them all equally in different ways.
Well, let me ask you this, Carrie. Do vampires sparkle? It rocks. So what's
not in my world.
Wow, no. All right. Other than being a horror fan, I'm also a Hammer fan. So anything that has Peter Cushing /
Christopher Lee
in it, I will watch the hell out. So I have watched the entire scope of Dr. Frankenstein series stuff that Peter Cushing has done any number of times. And that includes... Oh my God, there's one really bad one. Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell. Oh my God, that was like one of the last ones, and that was done in the late 70s, and it was so horrible. So yeah, I will watch any incarnation of Frankenstein.
Ron, if all the Universal monsters were superheroes, which one would win in a battle?
It wouldn't be the Aquaman creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, he'd be wearing a wet orange shirt.
What would happen if the mummy got wet? What if someone just poured water on the mummy?
Oh.
Or lit him on fire?
Lit him on fire? How did they eventually kill the mummy?
Take
the mummy and you unwrap him and you dump him into a vat of water, he turns into the Kool-Aid Man.
What?
Oh, yeah.
God.
Hey, Basically, the mummy was an Egyptian zombie, right?
Old rag.
That's pretty much it.
But he's a step above a zombie because he still had some kind of intellect.
Yes and no. He's more like a golem at that point. Because the thing is, in the original, like The Hand of the Mummy in 1930s, he's controlled by that. He's always controlled by a priest. The mummy, even though he was a nobility, is always controlled by the priest that brings him back.
Yeah, so first, he's not trying to eat people. He's trying to kill specific people. So, I mean, in some ways, he's a zombie, but a very specialized zombie.
So, hence, he's more like a golem.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
So I wanna make a recommendation for a relatively new movie, too. A good movie to watch during this period of time for Halloween. Trick or Treat. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yes, I did. I saw that. It came out, 2 years ago?
Actually, it's been about 3 years now.
It's an awesome.
The last time you did a Halloween special podcast.
The cool thing is just so, sorry.
Oh, it's came out in 2007.
Wow. It's like an EC comic homage.
It's a very, very good film. I highly recommend watching it.
And the cool thing is Brian Cox actually imitates what's his name? Carpenter.
John Carpenter?
John Carpenter, yes. He actually
not Karen Carpenter.
No. He came up with that sort of outfit of that, but you know, the old bus driver.
Not John Carter either.
No, John Carpenter. So if you see a picture of that guy and compare it to John Carpenter, that's where Brian Cox came up with that.
That's definitely not John Stamos.
No, only because I read Rue Morgue about that. So I pick up Rue Morgue every once in a while. It's a good magazine.
It's you know, that's like the perfect Halloween movie, in my opinion.
It is. I like it because there's like several stories, and there's a overall story arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's
they all
some
intertwine.
Really. Yes. Doctor, you can actually see some of this on YouTube. Dr. Terror's House of Horror, which is sort of like an EC comic type. And the thing is there was a Tales from the Crypt that Great Britain did way before the Americans did it. And that was done in the 60s or 70s. And the Crypt Keeper was actually Ralph Richardson, Sir Ralph Richardson. And it had, I think that was the one with Tom Baker in it.
Sir Ralph Richardson. That was played by John Goodman, right? Oh, it was King Ralph. Never mind.
That was King Ralph. No, Ralph Richardson was like the old. He played the Supreme Being in Time Bandits and stuff. He had
He's in the Supremes?
In Time Bandits.
This what you're talking about? Is this from like the 60s? Is it you're talking about?
Yeah. So
yeah,
I
see them.
So anyway, you can actually see some of these old
Cushing
movies. Yes, on YouTube.
Well, that's actually a great wrap-up question, Ed. Rox, do you have a movie or horror book story recommendation to read or watch, say, like on Halloween night?
Oh, you know, on Halloween night.
After you've killed all the hobos.
I have this giant book. I have this really cool book called Halloween. And it was produced by Cemetery Press. And I think I bring this out every year. I'm still not done with it. And I only read it at Halloween because this is the cool thing. It has famous authors and stuff either submitting a story or telling of a Halloween, you know, remembrance that they had. And I have not gotten through because I just read it on that night. And like Ray Bradbury wrote in when he was sad on a Halloween because that was the day Fellini, the director, passed away. And Fellini was actually his friend. So he just, you know, he put a stop to Halloween that night. He's just like, I just couldn't do Halloween that night. But there's some really great stories in it. And I read like a couple stories each year. So it's called Halloween. Either that or actually pick up Ray Bradbury's The Halloween Tree. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Halloween is available on paperback. It's, let's see, Ray Bradbury, Peter Straub,
Caitlin Kiernan. Yeah. She's good.
I got a bunch of folks.
It's a great book. I like it. I have had it for a number of years, and like I said, I only break it out on Halloween night.
And the Kindle edition's only like $7. So
yeah.
It's not bad. What about you, Carrie? You got something that you recommend for watching or reading on Halloween night?
Well, the aforementioned Cabin in the Woods, it just hit DVD not too long ago, and it's brilliant. I was never that great of a Joss Whedon fan, but boy, between this and the Avengers, he's just knocked it out of the park. He can do basically anything he wants right now, movie or TV-wise. Longer term, like I said, Night of the Living Dead was probably my favorite film, but just hearing you guys talk really brought back memories of so many other old horror movies that rewatching probably wouldn't be that much fun, but in memory, I really love them, and they were obscure things like The Incredible Melting Man.
Yes! Squirm!
Just disgusting, but I loved that.
Oh my God, Food of the Gods. That gave Marjo Gortner another stab at a career.
Yeah, that's straddling the line between sci-fi and horror, but
it is.
But that's another one. It's those kind of movies that I really grew up on watching on Saturday afternoons.
Yeah.
My advice would be branch out, go look at some of these older films that you may not have heard of, some of these older, obscure fringe titles. You might find some stuff that's really enjoyable.
What about you, Ron? What film or book would you recommend for Halloween night?
I guess the horror book that I'm reading right now is Heart-Shaped Box by
Joe Hill.
Yeah. And I've only read like three chapters, and it's creepy.
He is really good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Currently reading that. Are we doing other recommendation thingies, or Scott?
What else do you want to recommend?
I was just going to say, next weekend in Orlando, Florida, is Spooky Empire. I don't know, people like horror convention stuff. They actually have some pretty good guests going.
I went to that a few years back, and it's good.
Yeah, yep. Rose fun. McGowan, Robert Edlund, the cast of Nightmare on Elm Street 4, the cast of Zombie, the cast of Cannibal Holocaust, which I think Carrie mentioned, John Kraser, the Tales from the Crypt Keeper guy, guy who's Kane Holder's been in a couple of Friday the 13th movies, Sid Haig, Chris Sarandon from Fright Night. Is he related to Sarandon? Susan Sarandon?
No, I don't think so. Rox, are you familiar with that convention?
Yeah. I just wind up doing something else at that time.
It's a good convention, T-Bone. Actually. It's a lot of fun.
Oh. I keep meaning to go.
From Walking Dead?
Yeah. And let's see, Tracy Lords will be there. A bunch of Ghost Hunter goobers. Patrick Muldoon from Starship Troopers. Yeah, that's someone to watch out for. Oh, R.L. Stein will be there.
Oh, really? Fun, actually.
Lachlan Monroe, who is the dead man on campus. Was not a zombie movie, but has the word dead in it. And he was in Freddy versus Jason, I guess. Let's see. Anybody else interesting going out there? I'm playing in a poker tournament there. I won it a couple of years ago, so I must regain my title. Let's see. They got a zombie walk going on. So that's in Orlando. You can go to spookyempire.com. It's next Saturday and Sunday, provided this gets posted before then. Okay, that's all I got.
Cool. Ed, you mentioned one, but do you have any others that you'd...
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Trick or Treat. That's a fantastic movie to watch. And right now, I'm actually in the middle of reading it again as Salem's Lot. I love Stephen King's Salem's Lot. It's the perfect movie for this time of year.
Yeah,
I mean, perfect book. I should say perfect book for this time of year.
But yeah, people, if you want something to read, go to manybooks.net and the Gutenberg. I keep wanting to say the Guggenheim. The Gutenberg Project.
The Steve Gutenberg
free,
Project.
For free books, and they do break it down to horror for early stuff, and they always add stuff like every, you know, like all the time. So you'll find stuff, and they'll actually sometimes they will actually use the artwork from the pulp magazine that they find it in and stuff. So check out those if you're a big reader.
You could also go to like Audiovox or some of the other free audiobook things, and a lot of the the old stuff could be recorded, and that we could hear creepy voices.
But isn't that like hit and miss sometimes? Yeah.
It's something that you might have people like me reading it or something. Not that I've read one, but you know, you can imagine you could probably get a lot of crappy things. But there might be some good ones.
But yeah, if you wanted to talk about like audio real quick, there was a really cool show years ago. It had, what was it? CBS put it out, CBS Radio, and E.G. Marshall was the host. Can't think of it. That ran until like the mid-70s. So I don't know if that's what you were going for.
Well, for me, watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, because that's about as scary as I would like to be. Which, interestingly, as I was looking it up, because it is the one quote-unquote horror film, although it really is more of a Carrie kind of... it's more of a science fiction film, I mean, with elements of horror. Because, I mean, it's in your dreams or whatever. He's not really, it's, you know, whatever.
I think Dokken was probably the most scariest part of that movie.
But here's the deal. You know who wrote the screenplay?
Tell me.
Frank Darabont.
Get out of here.
Wes Craven, Bruce Wagner, and Frank Darabont.
Wow.
I don't believe you.
He came up with the characters' names. That's what he did.
Wow.
In 1981, I guess he was actually...
I don't know. I would believe that. I mean, he did do The Mist, and The Mist was awesome. The Mist was really good.
He wrote... get this. He was a writer for Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, of course. With a dream warrior! Anyway,
scary.
The Blob, the 1988 version of The Blob, and the 1989 Fly 2, he was the writer as well. And then went ahead and was a writer and director for The Shawshank Redemption, probably one of the best films ever made. Of course, it was based on a already previously written story by Stephen King, but he, I guess he's been delving in that area for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't realize
because The Mist was a Stephen King story, and he did an awesome job on
it. He was also the writer, director, producer for The Green Mile, another Stephen King film.
Yep.
Of course, Walking Dead. He was the writer, developer, director, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
So cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we gave people lots of stuff to look for this October.
Happy Halloween.
Definitely. Happy
Halloween. Happy Halloween. Tune in for the big giveaway at 9.
Oh, God.
So you guys going to watch the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown thing?
Hells yeah.
That's probably more my speed, actually.
Hells yeah. Of course you're going to
watch
that.
Yeah, but tune in, kids, for the big giveaway.
And the Fat
Silver Shamrock.
Where are these kids' parents, by the way? Why are they standing in a pumpkin
patch? A junkyard? You know, there was a time when there were free-range children. I was one of them.
Free-range children.
And we got to roam everywhere. As long as
it
we were home at a certain time. Really?
Surprisingly, unfortunately, it still happens these days.
Okay. All right.
At least in my neighborhood.
Okay.
But Ed's out there yelling, "Get off my lawn!
Get off my yard! Get off my yard!"
They never listen. They never listen.
You're never getting this ball back.
Hey, Mr. Wilson!
All right. Well, I guess until next time, for Carrie, Rox, the gone Lee, who just disappeared and said like three words and disappeared. Did they say Ron already?
She just came on to say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Ron.
Right.
Great pumpkin guider.
And she's waiting in a pumpkin patch right now. I only only got rocks. Until next time, this is John.
I'm not sitting in that cemetery with her. I'm sorry.
Saying peace.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 833-210-TUG or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter @TheUniqueGeek. Visit our listserv at listserv.theuniquegeek.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons share alike non-commercial license.